we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to a very busy episode of Fusion Patrol. You might say we're going to be busy as bees today. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
So, listeners, tonight we are going to be talking about the penultimate episode of The Star Lost, entitled The Beehive. Ooh, sounds spooky already.
Yeah, it's giving me creeps.
Summary of the episode. Devon, the other two, are summoned to a zoological dome, which studies bees because the computer says there's a problem, like an emergency or thing. And there's bees and wacky scientists and big bees and mind control. And really, that's all the summary that really deserves.
Thank you. Good night.
Yes. It's,
we'll see you next week.
Wow. Yeah, it really is. It's that simple. There's some giant bees. They're menacing people. They're taking over their minds. They're trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do. So, so how'd you like this episode?
Well, the thing that was the most of interest to me was, one of our guest stars, and that's Antoinette Bauer, who, Star Trek fans will know is playing Sylvia from the episode Cat's Paw.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, I watched the whole episode thinking, Antoinette Bauer. I know that name. I know that name. I know that actress. I could not place that actress. I think it's that damn hair that she was wearing.
Yeah.
That made me, that just threw me. She's wearing the biggest afro I've seen since, like, Superfly films. And stuff. It's really a bold fashion statement that they have her in that afro. Yeah, okay. And the guy who was her
William
husband,
Hutt, who I looked at his IMDb. I mean, he was just a working actor, but primarily a stage actor. That was his big thing. Shakespearean trained, but he does have a nice little tiny genre credit in that he played a character named Lomax in the 1979 version of H.G. Wells' The Shape of Things to Come.
I've never seen that version.
Neither have I. In fact, I didn't even know it existed.
I was not going to admit that, but I did not know it existed either. I thought it was just the one,
Shape of
Things to Come. I knew they'd made a time machine about then that was dreadfully appalling. So, you know, why not make a Shape of Things to Come that was probably
apparently this was a theatrical release, too, because it had a PG rating.
Wow. Well, back in 1979, they didn't have much in the way of direct-to-video yet. That was still kind of an up-and-coming idea.
That's about as remarkable as this episode gets for me.
This episode, oddly enough, I was watching the episode and thinking to myself, they could have made something with this episode. I mean, you know, the premise that the bees are under the control of something and are working against you is as old as 1950s bee science fiction films. I mean, that is B grade, not B animal.
Oh, it's it is definitely right out of a, you know, and no pun intended, you know, the bee monster movie kind of story.
And those, although cheap or perhaps not the best made, can be tense and interesting if they're done right. This is so flat and so lackluster and so devoid of acting talent or direction or whatever it is that they ruin any potential they have in this film. Anything that should have been genuinely scary or worrisome was not done. It's like they had it all set up and they just could not pull it off. It had all of the suspense of a piece of paper. It's about all I can say. It was genuinely dire episode.
I found it slightly insulting because once again, you've got Dr. Marshall. He was the head scientist of this lab, who
being a scientist is crazy nuts.
Yeah, he's the mad scientist. And there's some really weird little details that really kind of bothered me. One of the things that we hear is that Dr. Marshall came across this lab 27 years ago earlier from when this episode takes place, and his wife, Dr. Heather.
Yeah.
They, along with two other people, they came across this lab and decided to make it, you know, the best science lab in the Ark. And immediately I started having questions like, you know, the actual hierarchy of the science divisions and labs and things like that on the Ark. And it just seemed like, well, where the heck did you people come from?
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of really stuck in my craw. I mean, I just go nuts. You know, it's the same thing that we had with Farthing's Comet last time. You know, all of a sudden, hey, you know, here's this Comet Lab and here's this science team, and they've been operating independently all these years since the accident of the Ark, and they're just blindly going about their job. I mean, now you want to talk about worker bees. I mean, there's a classic case right there, because they're just completely oblivious to anything else that's going on around them until something interferes with what they want to do.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing here with this bee habitat. And it just drove me nuts that how can you keep having these little communities that – I mean, it's one thing when you have an isolated biosphere, or even when you have those kids from many episodes ago. I mean, they're kind of self-contained. There was a reason for them to be self-contained, but I could see why they're sort of cut off from the rest of the Ark. I can sort of get that. But these science labs, I mean, they know full well. They even make mention mention of the accident.
Yes, that's even worse. And you know, it sounded like – so I have this kooky theory. But it did sound like, you know, he came along this 27 years ago, and then he kind of – not exactly in the same sentence, but sort of said after the accident. And it's almost like the accident occurred not long before 27 years ago.
Which we know is rubbish.
I have an idea. A missing episode of The Star Lost. This could make sense out of the whole thing. Devin, the guy and the girl, Garth and Rachel, traveled back in time to a period of time about 30 years after the accident. And that explains all these episodes of the last few episodes. That's what it is.
They traveled back in time.
Yeah, well, that episode was probably written by Harlan, and he pulled it, and so we'll never fight. I don't know. I mean, there's just no excuse for this. It just totally breaks the continuity, or it breaks the canon of the show, that these people are basically just doing their thing, running a science lab, and something. No, I assume they all know they're going to die when they hit that Class G. Solar
star.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really difficult to reconcile. It's like we really have forgotten the premise of the show. And the fact that they brought up the accident in this episode was really a double insult when they did it. Because I'm like, okay, come on. If you're just going to forget the accident, that's one thing. But if you're going to basically act as if it doesn't exist and then mention it.
Yeah, you acknowledge the accident and then you just skirt around it. Really? Which one is it now? I mean, we kind of need to be clear here. I mean, especially when you consider what was the whole premise of Star Lost in the first place. And that is, you got these three people who are trying to get the Ark fixed. Now, of course, you know, we know that there's really no big story continuity that is connecting all these episodes together. I mean, that's pretty darn certain from the way this whole thing's been written. I mean, I always
And you
maintain,
use the word written loosely, yes.
I mean, yeah. I always maintain, I would like to know, I mean, we know what Harlan did with the pilot, and, you know, the pilot episode, as it is now, bears little difference from the actual story that Harlan had written. But I still would like to know, what did he have in mind for the rest of the series? What was Harlan's plan? Because I still maintain that those ideas got chucked out the window and a bunch of junior high school students were brought in and were told, here, write a bunch of episodes. If you do a good job, you get an A on your next report card or something like that.
Well, you know, Harlan has a series of books that he publishes, self-publishes, of his old scripts and stuff that he's written that never got done. And maybe if you wrote to him nicely, maybe
there's no way to write to that man nicely.
Sure there is. There must be.
And then,
now we're talking about making a buck because he's selling these scripts in these books, which are not cheap, I might add.
Well, you got to find some way to play to his vanity.
Exactly. Exactly. And then he could put these out and we could find out. He could write a little thing that says, this is what I was going to do with the Star Lost. And then we could all be happy. And I could leave the show as after next time we're going to forever.
Thank God.
You know, this episode was, well, I want to say, was this worse than Man from Atlantis, the Imp? I'm not sure. It's still more.
Man, that's a tough question. Although, to be honest, I really kind of more put this one on par with The Naked Montague. Seriously. I mean, that's how annoying I found the story to be.
Okay, well, let's step through the bits that we laughingly call a plot. We start the action right in the middle of a scene where they're helping a guy out of a bee area, and hasn't got gear on. He's stung all over the place, and he's being assisted by some other beekeeper guys, and they're quite concerned about him. And Garth, Rachel, and Devin are just standing there.
They are simply there.
Yep. They're just simply there. And after a little bit of concern for the guy, Dr. Marshall is like, who are these people? The bees are bothered by them. Get them out of here. Go away. And they're like, oh, well, your wife let us in. We got this communication thing from the computer that said there was, like, danger here. And so we thought we'd come here and take a look. And if you don't mind, we're going to stick around to see if there's any danger here. It's that. It's like they're
just there. Yeah. And that bothered me to no end. It's like, wait a minute. A, why are you just there? I mean, they waltz in as if they belonged there all this time. And, I like the outfits.
Didn't they wear those outfits in one other episode somewhere?
I think they wore something a little different than that. Different color.
Isn't it nice how they all put on the same color clothes?
Hey, we got to be matching. This is color, after all, a color television show.
That's why I'd choose dark brown.
Yeah. And, of course, it matches the basic tone of the uniforms that everybody in the Habitat's wearing. Yay!
Good point. So they're just all sort of dark brown. Set designer was going through a bit of a...
He was going through his brown phase.
His brown phase. So the guy who got stung hundreds of times, he was a communications expert. And, after he, basically revives from the hundreds of bee stings.
Of which he is told, you know, the venom may be gone, but you're going to be feeling the effects of the stings for days.
Next scene, all clean. The marks are gone from his face.
Wow, that was quick.
And he just seems perfectly fine. Perhaps it's the anti-venom that's causing him to be such a bad actor. He does not put in a very convincing performance. He gives a little dissertation to Devin about how animals are very easy to communicate with, dolphins and chimpanzees and computers and all this stuff. But doggone it, bees are really tough.
Well, on top of the fact that he's not a very good actor, he can't even do anything decent with the terrible dialogue that he's given. I mean, he's given some really horrible lines.
Which
just makes the whole thing even worse.
Yeah, he has given some, and he just cannot, play them to save his life. There's a scene where he says something like, I can't believe it, and he tears his headphones off.
We have to get out of here.
Yeah.
We have to leave.
I can't believe
now.
What I just heard. And they say something to him, and he won't tell him what it is.
No, he won't tell.
He says, I wouldn't believe it if I saw it with my own eyes. It's like, it's a sound.
I know. And he keeps going on. And he says, what is it? What did you see?
I'm not telling.
I can't believe it.
I can't tell you.
I can't. But we have to get out of here right now, and we have to seal this lab. I'm like, you know? And that's how they end the segment. And I keep thinking, really? That is the most unbelievable little scenario played out in front of me just now.
And then they get interrupted by something, and Devin forgets about it for a while. The fact that we desperately need to get out of here and seal the place. And then they come back to the guy, and the guy says, well, I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable sharing. It'd be a risk too quick to jump to hasty conclusions. Let me just type it into the computer here and let the computer tell you, and we'll see. And then the computer basically says that this guy's trying to communicate with the bees, if that wasn't clear. And he's doing it by trying to use the sound of their wings as a carrier wave and feed it back to them. To try to establish some sort of communication. And the computer says basically that all this noise that they're hearing is coming from just four bees. Meanwhile, Garth and Rachel have been touring the beehives, or the areas between the beehives, of which there are 42, I think they said. Not 42 beehives, 42
segments
that have beehives in them of different types. And then they see four incredibly bad.
Really badly. Bad effect.
Bad.
Just blown up under a microscope.
Bees.
And
we should be terrified, but in fact, we're just sort of like.
Bad effect. I'm scared. Ooh.
And they're on the other side of the thing that they can't get through. So I'm not too worried about this. So Dr. Marshall, it turns out, is in the thrall of the bees, these giant bees, because they can communicate with him, and they have essentially turned him into a worker. And Ron manages to figure that all out by punching some stuff into the computer. And the computer comes to that conclusion that he's, and then as proof he exhibits, he says he works just as hard as the bees. He does
the same
hour.
He's practically one of them.
Which interesting that his wife hadn't noticed.
Yeah, really.
But there you go. He's in the thrall of the bees. So they decide they have to kill the bees, and they do that by pumping insecticide into the bee area, which does upset Dr. Marshall.
Yes, because somehow the bees figure out what's going on. They're able to somehow monitor all the activity going on in the lab, and at which point they then tell Dr. Marshall through vibration what's going on.
Anyway, it looks like they've succeeded in killing him. Unfortunately, they've also killed Keeble, too.
Yeah, but how he died is what I thought was interesting.
I can't understand that. See, this is one of those examples of where they tried to do something and it doesn't make sense. So Keeble, Marshall tries to break into the room that they're filling with insecticide, which will be lethal to him. So Keeble and the guys stop him, but then Keeble stays behind to close the door. He takes in what turns out to be perhaps a lethal
maybe
dose of the insecticide, and they drag him back to the research lab where he lies there for, I don't know, an hour or so, it seems, maybe, story time-wise, progressively getting worse. And finally, he expires. And then, for some reason, once he expires, they choose to unzip his shirt.
And then we get the weirdest visual effect, which I don't know. What was that supposed to be?
It was supposed to be bees. Yeah, I know. I don't know.
What was it supposed to be?
I think it was supposed to be
just
a
bunch of
bees
on his chest. And everybody's kind of like, oh, look at that.
And then we
and
go
it
to
was
commercial.
It was their calm reaction that made me think.
Well, it was more than their calm reaction. They didn't scream. They didn't do anything.
They
zipped it away. They went to commercial. When they came back, the body is gone. So, I mean.
Wow. They were very calm about it.
Where'd those bees go? I'd be worried about the bees.
I'd be very, very worried considering how aggressive those bees were becoming thanks to the queen.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned the Queen yet, have we? Because turns out that even though there's only four bees, it turns out there's really five bees, because there's four bees and the Queen. And the Queen apparently doesn't count when the computer is calculating bee mass. So that's just probably bad writing. And this is a painful episode to even, even just. Anyway, so there's a moment where, you know, the terrifying, ooh, the bees all over the guy, ooh, what a terrifying death. And then it's totally underplayed.
It's like, it's versus underplayed. And it goes over. We go to commercial break, we come back, and then it's like Keeble was never there.
There's some interesting scenes about how the bees are being controlled to do things like get through the doorways by prying their bodies through there and then leaving a mass of dead bee bodies behind so that other bees can get through the doors. Of course, we never see that. We're just told about it from the computer. Yeah, the computer in this case tells them that. Oh, otherwise, the stuff is explained to us by Ron, who is listening to the bees, who are apparently narrating.
He can now actually understand what's going on.
Yes, so in case you, the audience, are a little stupid, he can do things like... the bees are now warning Marshall. They're telling him to kill us, or, you know, that level of stuff. It's really, or they found out. It's like they're reading our minds. I don't know. Now the bees are getting upset, and they're ordering the swarms to surround us.
Oh, it gets worse.
Do tell.
There's a moment where, after they get Dr. Marshall back into the lab, they manage to convince him that the Queen needs to die. And the way they manage to do this is by helping him to understand that, well, the bees are now pissed off. They're now angry because there was an attempt made on their life. They don't trust any of them. And they would even be willing to turn on Dr. Marshall right now. He appears to be convinced of this. So he's going to go. Because you should point out, the insecticide didn't work in its gas form.
Yeah, not work on the...
on the big bees. Did not work on them.
It kind of sounded like, that it may have worked on the four worker bees.
Maybe, but not on the Queen.
But not on the Queen.
No, she's a super bee. So he agrees that first they're going to lower the temperature in the habitat. And I like how the bees actually were sort of in small groups committing suicide in an attempt to try to raise the temperature. That was nice. Doing that against the thermostat control. Anyway, Heather has the computer lower the environment to 50 degrees. And then she has it lower to, zero? Zero okay. degrees Fahrenheit?
That part was weird, too, because the killer bees, the big bee, is in the experimental dome. And she says, you know, bees become inactive around 55, even more so around 50.
Around 50.
So maybe we should lower the temperature to 50, or perhaps even 45. And she says, perhaps even 45.
I'm thinking lower to 30.
And then she lowers it to 55, actually. I think it's 55. It's either 50 or 55, but I think it's 55. But then the bees are swarming around them, and Devin goes, well, what about lowering the temperature or something like that? And she goes, yeah, that's a good idea. Lower the temperature in the hallways to zero.
Yeah. Really?
Why didn't they just go straight for zero?
Yeah, go straight for zero in the habitat. You know, I think really that was a brilliant idea. So anyway.
Yeah, all right, go ahead.
This is an attempt to try and slow them down. Dr. Marshall is going to take a really big syringe that has this same insecticide in a pure form, and he's going to directly inject it into the Queen in order to kill her. So they're all a little nervous. And, you know, are you sure you're not going to fall under the control of the Queen? I know what I have to do. So it goes out there. And then after a while, Ron, this is the part that just really floored me. He's listening with his vibration device, translator, headphones, whatever, and then makes shocking analysis that now Dr. Marshall is communicating the exact same way the bees are, because he's asking for Devin to join him.
Yeah, it's the bees, but it's talking like Dr. Marshall, using his cadence. His cadence.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well,
I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, I know what it means, but at the same time, it doesn't make any
sense. It doesn't make any sense.
That's really the weird part. It just doesn't make any sense. It's talking like him. It's using B-speak to speak in the strange, stilted way that Dr. Marshall speaks, except that Dr. Marshall doesn't speak in a strange, stilted way. So I would be shocked if you could determine the buzzing of bees is taking on the cadence of a human's speech.
Right.
Unless it was, you know, William Shatner, perhaps. But
oh, that I could believe.
Yeah. See, now that one I could believe. But I think Bill Shatner could save this episode. I think that he could have, you know, gotten with him and slapped him around a little bit and said, look, I made this film about rabbits. And or was that Dr. McCoy? Night of the Lupus. That was DeForest Kelly, wasn't it?
I think that was D. Kelly.
Which one was Shatner then? That was Kingdom of the Spiders, wasn't it?
I believe you're right.
Spiders, bees, same difference when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, yeah, except for the flying bit. And the legs. Number of legs is different. Always very important when you're being attacked by creepies. Yeah. It just doesn't make any, it just didn't make any sense. Anyway, he gets out there and he can't do it. He calls Devin over and he tries to convince Devin, you know, hey,
come over to the dark side.
We'll let you live. You can just work for us. And then Garth bursts through with a fire extinguisher that's actually a device for freezing specimens, freezes the bee, and everyone lives happily ever after, except that when they walk out the door, we see all four bees, worker bees, still
alive.
We see new giant bees bursting out of their
honeycombs
stages.
Mm-hmm.
So the story ends with the promise that the bees will be back in season two.
Perhaps. Oh no!
And the bees were also a mutant species that occurred because of the accident.
Around the time of the accident, yeah.
So what have these bees been doing for 500 years?
That's the other thing that's been really bothering me. And, of course, given the way bees can multiply, I would have thought that if you just had those bees in that part of the arc, I'd be inclined to think that after all this time, assuming, of course, that Devin, Garth, and Rachel have not traveled back in time and that it's still been 500 years since the accident, that they would have taken over the Ark by now.
Yes, perhaps they could steer it away from the class
G solar star. That thing, that is the bane of my existence.
Well, in the next episode, I think they get to see the class G solar star. No, oh, I don't know.
Fab.
Wow. I do not have anything.
There's nothing redeeming about this episode.
No, there really isn't. There's nothing redeeming. There's no acting. I mean,
I'm going to go so far as to say that this episode doesn't even belong here. I mean, one of the things that really gets me, I mean, right from the very opening, as we've said before, our trio, they're just there. I mean, they come waltzing right in with the new outfits. Ooh, don't we look nice? And it's as if they had been a part of the science team all along. I mean, when did they get there? We understand that, okay, yeah, they were responding to some kind of alarm, but we find this all out after the fact. And it just makes the storytelling very hard to kind of wrap your head around. And then when the story ends, you don't see them leave.
Well, we had that complaint in Farthing's Comet. They didn't even leave there. They were just standing around. And
they're standing around here again, too. This is a nice way to bookend this story, you know, by just having them be there.
Yeah.
And the other thing that kind of really got to me is that, again, only one mention of the accident, and that's by Dr. Farthing when he's talking about, you know, how he came across some records and how these giant bees, you know, they date back to the time of the accident on the Ark. But nothing about the urgency of their mission ever comes up. And, of course, now I'm wondering, did the incident in Farthing's Comet actually make this whole issue with the Class G Solar Star a moot point now?
No.
I doubt it.
I doubt it.
So
when they got it steered it back on course, they got it back on the course to
back
the
on course
G
to the star. That's kind of where I'm thinking. Although they could steer in any bloody direction they want. But this episode is so standalone in the worst way. I mean, even in some of the worst episodes that we've seen earlier this year, there's something to connect it to what their mission is, and that is to find some way to save the Ark. There's none of that here. The Ark's safety is not even mentioned.
Yeah.
And so, again, this story now has absolutely no place in this poor, loose excuse of a story arc regarding the safety and the rescue of the Ark. You know, so after all of that, what is their purpose? I mean, are they going to – I mean, if the Ark is now safe, what, are they just going to kind of wander around the Ark and say, oh, hoody, hoody, ho, let's go behind this door. What are we going to find here?
Yeah, but which
– I mean, what's the purpose of the series now if now the whole issue of the Ark is no longer an issue?
What is the purpose of this series? Well, this series was made all those years ago for no other purpose than for us to talk about it on a podcast. It is possibly the most prescient piece of work ever done because they knew when they were making it. They envisioned the idea of podcasting. They envisioned the idea of organized fandom. They created it for us. That's my feeling.
Wow, that's incredible foresight.
It is incredible foresight. It is. It's remarkable. They should have spent their money buying an Apple stock.
Yeah.
But
so in any case, you know, when I finished watching this, I just sat there scratching my head thinking, wow, insulting on so many levels, and this episode absolutely serves no purpose in the grand scheme of this series. And I say, and I use the word grand with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek.
As well you must. As well you must. I have got nothing. I mean, I literally have nothing on this episode to discuss.
Everything I got is just little trivial things that just help to make the story
worse.
Even worse. I mean, we understand, okay, there's a swarm of bees going on. You know, oh, this is great. Then, you know, a couple of hatch doors open up. And it's like, oh, that, you know, and that's all that separates you between the lab and the habitat. That's it.
Just a door.
Just a door.
I liked how they pulled the whole air supply thing. Mm. They sealed off the lab to keep the bees out. And then they started having trouble breathing. And they had the computer do the calculation. We only have, you know, with six people in here, we only have 17 minutes left. And, of course, that's patently ridiculous in a room that size.
Oh, I know.
Why, you could probably survive longer underneath the sea in a sub and in shadow defense forces.
Yeah, we know people who have done that. Well, we know of people who have done that.
Or even longer in an upturned boat for days. It's just by yourself. But
yeah. I mean, and other things like there was, oh God, a really ridiculous moment where Devin and Garth go out and they're wearing some kind of protective clothing because the bees are there. Well, one
is this where they tear them off as soon as they have to do something?
Well, first off, they're really not wearing protective. I mean, they've got a bee net, which doesn't even really cover them very well.
Yeah.
And, of course, because of the flashy 70s, and you have to have your top unzipped down to the middle of your chest because it looks cool.
Well, it's good for ventilation, too.
Yeah, and it's great for bees to get into because the net doesn't reach down that far. And then, as they approach the experimental habitat where the large bees are, oh, let's just rip this stuff off.
Yeah, it was weird that they just took off. And then later in the episode, I don't know if you noticed, but later in the episode, Garth is going to go somewhere, and they say, oh, Garth, you're going to get stung. And Miss Teresa, or whatever, Miss Heather, says, oh, I have something that will help you.
I have
you.
Some protective...
I have some protective clothing in here.
And I'm like, oh.
In the closet where they already got the
protective... Where they already got the previous protective clothing.
So I'm thinking they might actually sort of know about the protective clothing. So he does indeed put the protective clothing gloves on and carries the hat throughout the hallway with the attacking killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you got to get this face on TV. That's in the contract, okay? Not cutting a mask over it. I can't breathe with the mask. It's
even though it's got all these holes in it.
It's too much for me, okay? That's the way we do these things. Yeah. You know, I'm just gonna say let's call it a mercifully short episode and say is this the worst episode of The Star Lost?
Easily.
It is pretty dire.
I can't even lampoon it. I mean, I've seen some bad episodes that had elements in there that were so god awful bad that it was worthy of laughing at. I can't even laugh at this one. It's just it oh my god, banal.
Mm.
I mean, this is really just scraping the bottom of the barrel.
And they don't appear to have had any time to rehearse it either.
No, not really.
It does kind of just feel like their guy comes, director saying, okay, Devin, here, stand there, say something. It doesn't feel natural, like, say, good acting would. It doesn't feel like they're reading it off of cue cards. It just kind of feels like they've just sort of been sketchily given their...
It feels like they're going through blocking,
yeah,
in a play, and they're just kind of, you know, they're not acting. They're just kind of like reciting their lines as they hit their marks, and that's it. I mean, there is absolutely nothing redeeming in this episode except possibly Antoinette Bauer's hair, which provided a lot of entertainment.
It was definitely at least it's not a beehive hairstyle.
No, thank God.
That might have been.
I'm sure at some point that was suggested.
So now let's make her look hip. Give her the hair. All right. Well, when we come back for another episode of Star Lost, which will not be next week, I promise.
Thank you.
Will not be next week. It will be the final episode of the series. And could it possibly get worse?
Only time will tell.
Listeners, I hope you'll join us to find out if it really is as bad or worse than The Beehive on another episode of Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Oh, that worked very well. Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. That should be
Ben. Well, that didn't work.
No, it doesn't work, does it?
I'm Bien. No, that sounds even worse. Cut that.
Okay, we'll just either cut that or put it at the end.
Put it at the end to embarrass me.
Yeah. For